to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about tool time. Let's talk about bull wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in, are they in harmony? Do, do, help a snowman, do.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to another squeaky chair episode of Helpful Snowman Radio. It's been a minute. And, keeping on our previous theme of turning this into a book-based podcast for however long it takes me to get bored of that. Today's book is The Shining by Stephen King, which I know is something that many of you have probably read. And even if you haven't, you have. I will explain if necessary as we go. Also, today we'll be talking about the title I've come up with for this episode, if it wasn't The Shining by Stephen King, is The Last 9 months Have Been the Worst Year of My Life. Which is something that I thought the other day, and then I was like, oh, I like that. That's cute. And then later I was like, surely I didn't invent that, right? Like someone has come up with that, or basically the same thing, right? Like this week has been the longest year of my life. I mean, I'm certain, part of my self-doubt, my personal problems are that like anything that's good, I'm like, I probably ripped that off. You know what I'm saying? I did have a good idea for like joke material, because I've always been thinking about like, how should I like, I don't know, sometimes I've been like, I want to write and then perform like a stand-up set and then add in audience noise and stuff and then just release it as though it was recorded, whatever. And then today I was like, you know what I should do? It's like, you know how comedians, I don't even think this works anymore, but they used to like release a book and it was basically their, you know, their bits in book form. Like George Carlin would do that, or like Seinfeld or whatever. I was like, I should write these down because, you know, that's, I think, more where I shine. And then I should design a cover and stuff and make it look like I released this. And it's like my stand-up from the 90s. You know what I mean? Like, just rip off the cover of Seinfeld's Sign Language. Because, you know, one of the good things about, like, I learned from Poon Master Flex that he is, like, persona non grata at this point. Is that the right term? And, you know, because of something to do with Israel-Palestine. I am not being dismissive of what's happening there. I don't follow Seinfeld's take on it, you know, and whatever. But the good thing for me about him being in that status is like, I feel like I could rip off his book cover and no one will be mad. You know what I mean? No one would be like, and no one's going to be like, well, comparing yourself to a very funny man is difficult, because who could say that? Who could say that with a straight face? Now, then, you know, then I'd be like, oh, I see. So, you know, you're fine with the death of Palestinian children. That's what I'm taking away from what you just said. Anyway, so, you know, look for that on bookstore shelves, probably never. But on my, you know, ideas for things to write list for the rest of my life. And then probably existing in cyberspace beyond my death. Of no use to anyone. So, let's just go back, talk about, I feel like my troubles started in the fall of 2025. There are some things that happened with my mom that I'm not going to talk about because I don't think she would want me to, but it's made our relationship a little more difficult. I'll just say my piece of it. She was going through a difficult thing, and I felt like I was one of only a few people that she talked to about it. And that was difficult for me because some of the choices she was making based on, you know, everything that happened were not the choices I would make for myself. And so that was difficult. You know what I'm saying? I know that's vague and this is terrible podcast fodder, but there you go. It was a difficult thing for me to go through. And I know it was difficult for her. It was worse for her than for me, for sure. But this is when I'm calling the times of the troubles sort of began. Probably about a month after that is when my car gave out and I had to buy a new car. And I think, like, for normal people or for some people, this is like a good thing, you know, or fun or a joyous thing, or like they're able to see the good in it. For me, it was horrible because, you know, the expense is not fun. But I will say this. Listen up, idiots out there. Something I learned from my father-in-law, which is perhaps the best piece of financial advice I've ever gotten in my life, and which he follows to this day, as does my wife, and as do I now. And his advice was, you should always be making a car payment. And what he meant by that is, even if you don't have a leased vehicle, you should be putting that amount of money away for a car. And, you know, living where I live, very difficult to live without a car. And boy, is that good advice. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, and put simply, this is the kind of thing that, you know, is like good dad advice. I don't know that I could say I ever got advice on that level from my dad. Whenever I think of advice that I was given by my dad, I mean, he gave me advice at times that was, you know, whatever. I remember one time he was very drunk and he just told me, if you ever get constipated, just eat a whole head of lettuce. And I was like, okay. He said it, he was very drunk and he was kind of like passed out and sort of came to, gave this advice, and he said, eat a whole head of lettuce, and then just went like, and then kind of passed out again. I don't know why he was thinking that. I presume he must have been constipated and eaten a whole head of lettuce and then shit like crazy. That's all I can assume. Anyway, so, you know, I had the money to buy a car, but it's very stressful. You know what I mean? And it sucks because you're like a very high percentage of the money that I've saved up working for a very long time is just going to go to buying me a car, which is a thing I had, you know, a week ago. And wasn't even going to do it. And then it's like the tyranny of needing a car is that you're like, you can save and like try really hard to save. And then like the next day that can just be wiped out. I don't know. I know that sounds like simple economics and you're like, why am I listening to this? Like, this guy doesn't know anything. Well, my father-in-law gave good advice, so fuck off. I'm a conduit through which good advice has flowed before, even if I'm not coming up with it myself. I've heard it and can pass it on to you. Anyway, it was very stressful, and I got a car, and it was fine. It did make me think, though, you know, I was like, I don't love when I have to say, like, Tesla, for example, is doing something right. But I have to say that Tesla does one thing right, which is like you just buy it from them. You don't have to go to like a dealership. You know what I mean? You can just buy it. And like, that is the future. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking stupid that like I could look up cars at a dealership, but I don't actually know how much it's going to cost. You know what I mean? And it's like they change the price depending on your credit and like, and that gets into credit, right? Because credit's the biggest fucking scam, simply because it's like, so by checking it, my score gets worse. because I may be considering doing something that would lower my credit. That lowers my credit. It's like a thought crime. Using credit is a thought crime in terms of what it does to your credit. Anyway, bought the car. And, you know, I was like, well, I mean, the plus side here is like, you know, my car was probably in the shop every six-ish months for the last year and a half. Needed major repairs. I wasn't like the most confident driving it like long distance or whatever. So I was like, I mean, this is a positive change because now I do have a car that I feel like, okay, I can drive this. I was just thinking, anyone who was listening to this who was like, I'm going to listen to a review about Stephen King's The Shining must be like, what the fuck am I listening to? We'll get to it. Okay, the books are just a sort of spark or like something related to, you know, this ongoing hell that is my life. Just, you know, you want a review of The Shining, the novel? There are like 1,000 podcasts you can listen to where they'll just tell you a summary of the plot and then give it a, you know, how many ghosts out of 5? Because that's, you know, how many demons out of 666 do they give this horror novel? Okay? There's a million things where you could do that. I host a podcast where I do that for Spider-Man. All right? One of several million. Which, by the way, some time ago, someone emailed me because I haven't done an episode of that in like forever. I am thinking of restarting it. And someone was like, could I like take it over and start doing it? And I was like, I mean, you could just do a podcast with that idea, but no, you can't just like have the one I invented and do it. Like, it didn't even make sense to me what the person was asking. I didn't even really understand it. Anyway. So I get this new car, very stressful. And I believe it was in December, just maybe a month or two later. I was parked at a college parking lot and some kid hit it with his car. I think I went over that in detail on the show, so I'm not going to get too into the weeds on it. But basically, this kid crashed into my car and I had to get it repaired. And it's such a huge pain in the ass, right? Because you have to, you know, you have to go through insurance and then you have to schedule with a body shop. And then the body shop is like kind of like going to the doctor, where it's like going to the doctor always involves a waste of time appointment to start with before you can actually do anything. Like, I don't care what kind of doctor it is. It is like the first appointment is a very half-assed appointment. They'll ask you some questions. But that, you know, you don't leave with anything to do. You don't like leave with a device or a therapy exercise or anything like that. It's just like, okay, so I made an appointment because my leg hurts. And then you go in and they're like, okay, so your leg hurts. And you're like, yeah. And they're like, how long has your leg hurt? And you're like, aren't you guys busy? Like, wouldn't this be better if I could just fill out a form or something? Like, couldn't you just make an online form for like leg hurts? How long? Which leg? Maybe ask which leg before how long, but I don't know. I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, doctors. So I, had to do all that. I mean, and that wasn't a nightmare, but it was, you know, these things are all stacking, right? They're all happening simultaneously. On the Friday before Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, so that was mid-January. That Friday, there was a bunch of wind, and it blows the big garbage bins where I live all over the place. And there was one that had been blown way down the street that normally lives at the clubhouse, where they had to put a garbage can because people would just throw their junk mail on the ground. And I'm just like, how do you find a place to live where it's like reasonable? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to live somewhere where it's like a militant HOA that is like, you can't grow basil because that's an Italian plant and we, you know, no Italians need apply. We hate those Italians. But also where it's like people don't ride like a dirt bike up and down the street for an hour, which is what happens here a lot. You know what I mean? A guy doesn't ride a snowmobile on the grass. There's like a grassy area. He doesn't drive a snowmobile up and down the grass and tear it up and make a bunch of noise and just annoy the shit out of everybody. When there's no fucking snow, by the way. Like, how do you, you know, how do you find a place to live where when the mailbox is about a 15 second walk, people don't drive to the mailbox on their way in or out, which I wouldn't be super opposed to, and then park diagonal across all the spaces, open their car door, leave the car door open with music blasting while they check the mail, and then get back in. You know what I mean? And it's like, how do you just like find a place to live where everybody is reasonable and also like assumes that other people don't want to listen to or do what they're doing? You know what I'm saying? What the fuck? I mean, like, I'm a reasonable guy. Our neighbors had a party like 2 weekends ago, and it was pretty fucking annoying. And it was on Saturday, and it went from like 2 or 3 in the afternoon to like 11 at night. And I wasn't happy about it. And I was like, and they were all shouting and playing very loud music in their garage. And I was like, you know, if you turned the music down, you wouldn't have to yell at each other, right? Like, there's a simple solution here. This is like one of my big, big things that I always come back to that I'm like, I know I'm being an obnoxious, you know, in Japan, they do it. Like, so many of the restaurants we went to in Japan were pretty quiet. You know what I mean? And they don't play music. And they don't play music there. And so therefore, you don't have to talk over the music. And then every other table around you is talking over the music. And so, yeah. All right. This is, look for this in my new book, Pete Language or whatever. Snow Language. So, car got hit. Okay, so I'm pushing this garbage can back to the clubhouse. And it was a super windy day. The wind blows the lid right back into my face. Smashes me right on the bridge of the nose. Ended up going to urgent care because my nose just wouldn't stop bleeding. But they didn't really do much. But that's fine. That was Friday. Monday, I got food poisoning. Like the worst food poisoning I've ever had. I've only had it that I know of, I think, twice in my life. And it was awful. I was telling Poon Master Flex, because for some reason we were talking about, she made the mistake of being like, what do you think is the worst day of your life? I think because we were talking about when her cat died. And she's like, that probably is still the worst day of my life. And I was like, I have a few to pick from. But, you know, I was like, honestly, when I had that food poisoning, that first day, it's like I was incredibly nauseated or nauseous, whichever one it is, from like 11 a.m. until 4 in the morning the next day. And just like felt awful. And had to puke several times, you know, and just whatever. And I was like, I was laying in bed that night and I was just like counting breaths because I was like, well, every time I breathe, I'm a little bit closer to the time when I won't be sick anymore. And she was just like, that sounds horrible. I was like, yeah, it was horrible. You asked which was the worst day of my life. She quickly was like, she was like, what do you think's the worst day of your life? She's like, well, wait, what do you think's the best day of your life? And I was like, oh, you can't just quick reverse on me like that. You can't uno reverse it that fast. Hold on. So I got sick and I was very sick for probably 4 or 5 days and then started feeling, you know, mostly okay. Probably about a week or two after that, I think is somewhat of a result of that. I got incredibly super constipated. This is not normally a problem I face. Normally, I'm on the opposite end of that spectrum. I've not really dealt with it very much. Probably only a small amount of it when I've been on painkillers in the past. So, I got real constipated. And long story short, I think that resulted in then a couple weeks after that. And the constipated day was also in my top five worst days. So I've had two of my top five worst days, and it was like January or February, right? February, Valentine's Day, I got my first external thrombosed hemorrhoid. Now, people don't know I've discovered a lot about hemorrhoids unless they've had them, and then they usually do know more. But an external thrombosed hemorrhoid is a different beast. It is something that happens outside your butt. Normally, a hemorrhoid is fairly painless because it happens inside your body in an area that there really is no nerves in there to like for sensation. You know what I mean? So you're not really feeling pain from them. But sometimes they pop out and then they can feel like that. But an external thrombosed hemorrhoid isn't just one that was internal and popped out. It's actually one that exists outside of your butthole, which I discovered is a place that has like more nerve endings than almost any other place on your body. It's like, it's one of the more nerve dense places on your body. And I know this sounds like I'm trying to convince you that butt sex is a good idea. And I'm much the opposite now. I'm like, no, I don't think I would ever try and talk someone into that. This was probably the most painful thing I've ever experienced. And after a few days, I went and had it lanced at urgent care. They basically, there's a blood clot in there, and they cut the hemorrhoid open, push the blood clot out like it's a big zit. The doctor was like, "You a person who likes to see what stuff looks like?" And I was like, "Sure." And he's like, "Here's the blood clot." And I took a picture. And Poonmaster Flex, she was like, "That's the worst pain I've ever seen you in." She's like, "I can't tell you what it was like. Like, the difference between when we went into urgent care and then when we were going home." And she's like, "You were like euphoric." And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, I was in no pain for the first time in, I don't know, 48 hours or so." But after that whole ordeal with the hemorrhoid, I went to a surgeon and some other gastroenterologist, and then a pelvic floor therapy thing. And one of my friends in a text thread was like, "How many people do you think have had their fingers in your butt in the last, like, you know, in the course of your life and in a, you know, medical context?" And I counted and I was like, minimum 9, but probably more. And I was like, I'm also excluding anyone who was involved in my colonoscopy as well as my surgery. Which, spoiler alert, here that comes. So I recovered from the one hemorrhoid, and you know, whatever. And then I was feeling good for, I would say, a week to 2 weeks before I had my second one in the same exact spot. And that went much worse because it was very difficult to get in to see a doctor. No one would lance it for me. And it's like, you can go and just wait, and it will eventually reduce in pain and stuff like that. Lancing, it's better because you get more immediate relief. And also, I think it heals a lot easier. But hey, there we are. So I got the second one. And then a surgeon was like, "Well, because you had the second one in, you know, a month, I'm going to recommend surgery for it because, you know, this could just happen again." And I was like, okay, you know, and I was dreading that answer because I had, of course, been online, and a lot of people rate this surgery as very painful and the recovery is pretty awful. And, you know, one Reddit post in particular I remember was like, nurses where I work call it the devil's surgery because it's awful. So I got scheduled for surgery. I had the surgery like the next week. And I'm now about 6.5 weeks into recovery and starting to feel kind of normal. I've lost like 20 pounds. Just because I was like kind of restricted diet wise and whatever. It's been, you know, like the last 6 weeks, well, the last 8 weeks or so have been on a super bland diet and pretty regimented lifestyle and bathing 3 times a day and stuff. You know, part of what was hard about me getting this hemorrhoid is like, I do most of the things that you're supposed to do to not get hemorrhoids. You know what I mean? They're like, well, if you're like really overweight and you know, you don't get exercise and if you don't eat salads, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I do all of the things I'm supposed to do. The one thing that I, you know, have speculated that may have caused my problems is when I, caused an escalation that was so sudden. So when I had food poisoning, I stopped drinking coffee, right? Because like, I could barely keep anything. I could, the first like 24 hours, it was like drinking water was difficult. But you know, so coffee was just like a no, no way. And by the time I was feeling better after that, I hadn't had coffee for like 5 days. And I had been thinking like, maybe I should try and just like give that up for a while and see if that makes a difference. Like, I don't know why it would, but who knows? You know what I mean? And I tried it before, but I'd only quit it for like, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. So I basically quit drinking it almost completely. I would still occasionally have it on the weekend, and that would be like a 3 or 4 ounce cup of regular coffee, you know, once on Saturday and once on Sunday. But that was it. And so I did wonder if that's what caused, you know, the constipation and so on. I know this is sounding like a therapy session. So during my recovery, I also signed up for therapy. And that was a whole fucking thing. All right, listen up, doctors. Therapists especially. You want to know why people don't do therapy? Because it's a huge fucking pain in the ass. You know what I mean? I looked up a therapist. First of all, you try and find a therapist, and that's difficult. But I used one that was like within the health system that I'm part of. And they were like, that I'm part of, that I pay money to rip my butthole open. And, you know, I looked through the people they have and found someone who I was like, oh, this seems good for me. I mean, there are a lot of counselors out there. A lot of them seem very nice or whatever. There are a lot of Christian-based or faith-based counselors, you know, which I'm like, I guess that's fine, but that's not for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to work for me to go to a counselor and for them to be like, trust in Jesus or whatever. And I'll be like, I guess on one hand, I haven't really tried that, so maybe there's something to it. But on the other hand, not really what I'm looking for. You know what I mean? I think I could get someone to tell me that I should trust in Jesus and I wouldn't have to pay them for it. I can probably get that for free, right? So I found a guy. I call the like office facility where he works and they were like, oh, you have to call your regular doctor, get a referral, and then we can schedule you. And I was like, that's dumb, but okay. And then I do that, and it was a whole, I don't want to go through it all. It was a whole rigmarole. And I just feel very strongly that it's like, look, when a middle-aged man calls and says, like, I think I could benefit from therapy, maybe just give him an appointment. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they're willing to take the step, why put up a barrier? Also, I was like, this is probably why there are so many like unlicensed or like, you know, questionable background counselors out there. Because it's like, well, look, I don't have to call my fucking doctor to get an appointment. Or this is probably why people, you know, let's put it like this. If I were to just go to the marijuana dispensary for my anxiety instead of a therapist, they wouldn't ask me for a note from my doctor. And I wouldn't have to message my doctor and then not hear back from them for like 2 days. And then get a note from them that's like, why do you want to go to therapy? And then I send them something back. And then I don't hear from them for another 2 days. So then I send them another message, which prompts them to finally give me the referral. Like, I wouldn't have to wait a week for you to get around to it. I would just drive over there and have marijuana in 15 minutes. And like, I'm not trying to do a thing about like, this is a quick fix society or whatever. Cause like, I, you know, that's not what I did. And I don't believe that that would help me. But I'm just saying, like, before we get all uptight about like, why don't more people do this? Or like, men will do anything but go to therapy. And I'm like, I mean, no, but I will do almost anything if it would get me out of having to do a bunch of bullshit admin stuff that is work. You know, it's admin work just to talk to someone about my feelings. During the course of all this, so between the time I had the second thrombosed hemorrhoid and my surgery, that weekend I was supposed to go see a concert of a band that I love dearly and have been seeing live, I mean, over a dozen times in my lifetime, Lucero. And they were playing a show at the famous Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, which is why I started reading the book The Shining. Because me and Poon Master Flex, you know, we were going to do a little splurge. We were going to stay there for one night, for the night of the show. Because, you know, it's like a quintessential Colorado-y thing. And, you know, it's like a fancy-ish hotel. I mean, it's not like crazy, but it's a little fancier. And, you know, it's quite a ways from home. So it would be much better than like driving home that night. So the plan was to stay up there, and so I started reading The Shining, because I was like, I want to read this book, and you know, that way, that seems like that's a good thing to do before you go stay at the Stanley. I don't know, maybe it felt like I was earning it a bit more, or like, I think I felt like, I'm probably not going to do this again, stay at the Stanley, so, you know, it's a little now or never, and like, I've never read The Shining, and I like Stephen King in general. So like, yeah, this, you know, it seems like people like that book a lot. I'll tell you, I've been to the Stanley before. I've never stayed though. Never been in like one of the guest rooms. I've never done like a tour. I've been there for like a wedding. And I was there for something else. We like had a drink at the bar or something. The Stanley has had, in my opinion, a weird relationship with The Shining. Stephen King, you know, famously, that's what the Overlook Hotel is based on, is the Stanley. And it seems like for a long time, they were trying to sort of push that aside, you know, and they just had a little thing I remember in like a downstairs area that was like about The Shining. But over the years, it seems like they've embraced it more and like they have, you know, like a Shining tour. And when I went there, one of the times I was there, they had what they were calling a hedge maze. But it was very small. And I mean, it was like shin height. The hedges were shin height. And I was like, well, I guess a hedge has to start somewhere. But, you know, and it wasn't much of a maze. It was like a hedge maze in name only. It was like, well, you know, you can explore our hedge maze. And you're like, oh, okay. But then you get there and you're like, poof. This seems like legally actionable that you've called this a hedge maze, in my opinion. So, but you know, this was going to be our like real stay the night thing. So I start reading the book. And here's what I have to say about the book. It's a book that, like, it is significantly different from the movie, but not so different from the movie that I think you necessarily need to read it. Like, if you really like the movie and enjoyed it, I don't know that you need to read the book. and vice versa. I mean, it doesn't hit all the exact same points, but it hits a lot of the beats. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, it felt a little bit like I was reading a novelization of a movie that I haven't seen, but I basically know everything that happens. You know what I mean? Like through osmosis. The Shining is like a rare book in that just through cultural relevance and because the movie is so fucking famous, you'll know a lot of what happens in the movie and in the book, right? Like even if you've never seen it, I'm sure people who've never seen The Shining recognize that carpet pattern, right? Like, or know that it's about something, or they might recognize like red rum or whatever. So it was a kind of a, you know, I wouldn't say it was a letdown. It's so weird to read a book in that, in the context of like being alive in 2026, because it was like, it was good. And I could recognize that it was objectively a good book. And like, I could see it being tense and, you know, interesting, but it's inescapable to know. I always thought of this like Wizard of Oz, and I don't know if that's the same example. I don't know what the example today would be, like Despicable Me 2 or something, but it's just like, look, like, you know what happens basically. And there are probably a couple little surprises in there for you if you've never watched it, and everyone will tell you got to watch it, but maybe you might not got to watch it. Just saying. But because of my health issues, we were unable to go. So that fucking sucked. But I did still finish the book. Finished the book while I was laid up. And I wouldn't say I loved it, but you know, I will also admit that that is potentially colored by the fact that I was dealing with a post-hemorrhoid surgery recovery. You know what I mean? I'm brave enough to just say, you know what, this book wasn't really my cup of tea. However, I had some things going on in my life that I think probably significantly affected my ability to enjoy being alive. So there you go. That's my Shining. I'm sure I've said some of this already. I'm sure I've repeated some of this. I've just had, you know, I think this has been the worst year of my adult life so far. Even if the next 3 months are much better, I think this has been the worst year of my adult life. And I'm just not great. Nothing is going well. And, but you know, I'm getting help. And I'm still, you know, I'm surviving. I still have my job. You know, I've managed to do a podcast now for the first time in like 2 months. And I have Pod-a-ween plans. And I have plans for the future. So like, don't worry about me on that level. Okay, like, I'm gonna be okay. But it's been a time. Highly confessional episode today, I guess. Been a while since I've done one like this, I think. Yeah. Well, thank you for listening. What a fucking letdown ending. Well, yeah. I do have a new idea for kind of this book related thing, but we'll see how that goes. You know, in the new year, I think I might start it. Or maybe in December. Maybe in October. Who knows? Who knows? But yeah, I'm hoping, I don't know, I'm getting a little better every day now, or at least not getting worse any days. I'm plateauing here and there. And hopefully another month or so and I'll be like good as new. But I guess we'll see. It's hard to be optimistic when you've had like 9 months of, if I had been optimistic, I would have been incorrect on all fronts. You know what I mean? Like, if I had been optimistic this whole time, I feel like people would be looking at me like, what is wrong with him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like people would be like, he's crazy. Like, it's crazy to be optimistic in the face of what reality is at this point. Well, that's a better way to end, though, because my therapist, so I'm supposed to do, he was like, I want you to come up with some goals. You know what I mean? And like, things that you're going to do, maybe like concrete things, things that you've enjoyed in the past that you want to start doing more of, you know, so maybe you can enjoy the present a little more. And so I was like, I'm going to read a little more. And I've been doing a good job. I read The Fucking Shining, okay? And now I'm alternating between two other books. Maybe we'll talk about that next time. An extremely bleak, you know, The World is a Tumor book, and a hilarious, funny little book. And they're short stories, and I'm going back and forth between them because I think that's funny. I don't know. That's what's in my brain. The other one was, I was like, okay, I'm going to start exercising again. Because I've been very hesitant to do that because I don't want to ruin my healing progress. But, you know, the surgeon was cleared me to like start light exercise if I thought I could. And that was at like 3 weeks or something. So, you know, week 6 to 7, I should probably be okay. So I'm getting back to that. But the other big one, he was like, because, you know, I was telling him, like, I feel like I'm just a negative person a lot these days. Like, I'll go walking with Poonmaster Flex and it'll be a nice day, like cloudy and cool and whatever, which is what I like. And, you know, she might say something like, oh, it's really nice out. And I will immediately think and or say, yeah, but it's going to be like 90 tomorrow. You know what I mean? And I can't enjoy that it's nice today because I know it's going to be 90 tomorrow. Or like, I can't get a good night's sleep on Sunday because I know I got to go to work in the morning. You know what I mean? And it's like, I can't live in the now, as they would say in a Wayne's World movie. But, so he was like, what I want you to do is think something positive every day. And he's like, it can be like you're enjoying something and be like, this is nice. Or it can be something like that you're looking forward to in the future. You know, like this is coming up and here's what's good about it. And I was like, okay. And he was like, you know, the way your brain works is it's lazy, right? And it wants to find the path of least resistance. So if you're used to thinking negatively all the time, and you're used to thinking that things are going to not turn out well and worrying about that and whatever, your brain will just default to doing that. So in order to stop doing that, you kind of have to push it to do something else. And he's like, so doing this is basically going to create new neural pathways for you. And, you know, then that will become, it'll take less force on your part to get your brain to think that way. And I, you know, I was listening to him and kind of thinking like, this kind of sounds like bullshit. I don't know why I was like, you're saying my brain is going to literally make a little road for neurons to travel down or whatever, chemicals. But I was like, I'll do it. I'll try it. If for no other reason, so then I can complain on a podcast about how this therapist doesn't know anything. So I have been trying to do that and trying every day to be like something positive. And a lot of times it's like Poonmaster Flex stuff, you know, she'll be laughing about something. Or yesterday we were just both in the kitchen and I ate pizza for the first time since I had surgery. I just ate like a tiny little personal pizza as part of my dinner, and, you know, I'm taking steps into eating more normally. And it, you know, it was just a very nice moment. And I was like, this is a nice moment I'm having right now. So I'm trying to do it. You know, I don't know what today's is going to be yet. I don't know if I've had it yet, but, yeah, it's fine until it gets later in the day and you're like, oh, nothing good was today. I guess I do have the escape hatch of I could think about something positive that's going to happen, but that's a little tough for me. You know, I'm not the best at thinking ahead that way. But yeah, hopefully I'll have one today. I'm going to work on it. I'll work on it. You know, we'll see. Maybe it'll be playing Metroid in the bathtub, which I've been doing. Metroid Zero Mission. Much more fun than I thought it was going to be. Because it's seems like Metroid for Dummies, which is exactly what I needed. We don't need to talk about how original Metroid is cryptic bullshit, right? All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.